I've never been with anyone who has seen, especially their first eagle, that doesn't utter something like, wow.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Birds play an important role in the health of an ecosystem, and Wyoming is home to a diverse population of birds, including raptors like the golden eagle and the short-eared owl. Scientists are tracking the population of these birds and the effect of climate change on their habitat. The Draper Natural History Museum at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West opened a new permanent exhibition earlier this summer. It focuses on the last 10 years of research on golden eagle activity in the Bighorn Basin. Golden eagles are a top predator, so by studying the top of the food chain, researchers are learning not just about the bird, but also about the dynamics of the animals they eat and the ecosystem they live in. Wyoming Public Radio's Camila Kudelska joined the team on a scouting trip.
I'm in a car driving through the Bighorn Basin with the Golden Eagle Research Study Group from the Draper Natural History Museum in Cody. Corey Anko spots an eagle.
And there's one sitting on a nest there.
Yep.
Anko is the assistant curator at the Draper. He's part of senior curator Charles Preston's team. Preston and his team have been researching golden eagles for the past 20 years. When he first arrived in Cody, there was no data on the eagle.
We realized we had no idea what was going on in our own Bighorn Basin here. And so I thought that was important to document. And so we can not only compare it with other sites, but we have a baseline and find out if there is a trend of increasing or decreasing population and reproduction.
That word baseline is key. Preston is hoping to tie his research in with other golden eagle studies.
What we're trying to do is develop a network of monitoring sites.
That's Brian Woodbridge. He's with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and is in charge of leading the Western Golden Eagle Team, which is a West-wide group of dispersed teams focusing on golden eagle conservation and management. He says the baseline research is what allows golden eagle studies throughout America to become a unified network.
Where they share results and methods and try to develop a more comprehensive picture of what's going on with golden eagles in the West.
Starting in 2008, after winning enough grants to support the basic amount of research, Preston began to collect the bare minimum data. This includes tracking reproduction and the food remains in the nest. Then, depending on the amount of funding, some eaglets received a satellite tracking device as well as leg bands. And with constant collection of what seems like not that much data, patterns began to pop up.
We found very early on that the diet is dominated, absolutely dominated by cottontails in our area, not many jackrabbits. We found a very strong relationship between golden eagle reproduction in a given year and cottontail abundance in that year.
So what they found is that the golden population heavily depends on one species for food, cottontail rabbits. And this led to even more questions.
And understand what may cause that and what the implications of that, not just for golden eagles, but for other predators, but also for the vegetation and maybe even the quality of graze for domestic livestock.
Anko, the curator assistant, says the initial data collected gives a clearer image of the dynamics of the Bighorn Basin ecosystem.
Every species, every ecosystem here is a different piece of that puzzle. And so when you step back, you put all the pieces together, you kind of look at the big picture of what's happening in sagebrush steppe ecosystems, what's happening in the Intermountain West, and, you know, what's happening as climates begin to shift or adapt.
As we drive through the area, the researchers explain that sagebrush is the ideal habitat for goldens, since they can easily spot their prey. But Preston says eagles are not the only ones that could be impacted by a change in the ecosystem. So he envisions creating discussions and conversations on the sagebrush steppe ecosystem itself.
It's all the same big piece of landscape, and it affects lots of people, and lots of people affect it. And we have this opportunity to look at conservation on a large scale and a real big picture with all the stakeholders in the room.
The Monarch of the Skies exhibition will hopefully continue this dialogue as the exhibition educates the public on the importance of studying the diversification of an ecosystem. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Camila Kadelska from the Center of the West in Cody.
One of the studies collecting data on golden eagles focuses on what they mean for the dwindling sagebrush ecosystem where they live. Last summer, Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards joined researchers on a trip to banned eaglets and find out what the research is revealing about this iconic species.
It's a chilly day in May in the middle of an energy field south of Cody. A group of us watch as rock climber Nick Sharavella rappels off a sandstone cliff to a nest of large branches below. Draper Museum curator and renowned raptor biologist Charles Preston gestures us over to take a look.
Right here, just be real quiet, but you can kind of look over. You can just barely see one of the chicks, but you can see a raptor.
Two fluffy white birds look out. The eaglets don't make a peep as Sharavella puts falconer hoods on the nestlings to calm them.
You know, these ones were on the younger side that we'll go in, so they were pretty tame for the most part. But lots of times they'll raise their wings at you and sometimes open their mouth. Sometimes they even hiss at you a little bit like a cat would.
Sharavella places one nestling in a canvas bag, and Preston hoists the bird up on a rope. Preston weighs the bird in the bag.
3,100 grams.
And then carefully lifts it out.
So here you can see the bird, and but we're gonna take control of those feet as soon as we can. They can do a lot of damage with these talons. There we go. There's a beautiful bird. A lot of down on this. This bird's just 4 weeks old.
Preston is the author of the 2004 book, Golden Eagles, Sovereigns of the Skies. He says these birds hold a special place in our hearts, appearing on the flags of hundreds of nations.
I've never been with anyone who has seen, especially their first eagle, that doesn't utter something like, wow. You know, they embody power and strength and whatever that elusive thing we call freedom is.
But they embody even more to the fragile ecosystem where they serve as an apex predator, with its 7-foot wingspans, incredible eyesight, and sharp talons.
It is at the top of the food chain, and as an adult, there's not another predator above it that will prey on
nobody
it.
Nobody eats an eagle.
That's right. So it's like wolves. So even great horned owl can be considered an apex predator.
And Preston says such predators help balance the entire ecosystem community below them. Out here, that means all the way down the food chain to the rabbits and the sagebrush.
When cottontail populations crash or go low, then eagle reproduction really drops as well, and vice versa. When the rabbits come back, the eagles really reproduce much more effectively.
But in many areas of the American West, the sagebrush where those cottontails thrive is filling in with invasive cheatgrass that grows fast but burns even faster.
So you start burning cheatgrass, and guess what replaces it? More cheatgrass. And so it replaces native sagebrush, native grasses, changes the environment drastically. I mean, just amazing, which changes prey for golden eagles.
But it's also urban sprawl and wind farms and energy fields like this one that are disturbing the balance that golden eagles now reign over. Preston says, sure, right now their populations are relatively stable, but...
We are finding a few nest sites and nest territories that have been abandoned over years as people move into an area, as there's more and more activity.
Some of the nest sites Preston studies even have prehistoric Thunderbird rock art near them. He says that could mean eagles have occupied these same nests for hundreds or even thousands of years. Preston says wildlife agencies should learn from the success of the greater sage grouse and start protecting golden eagles and their sagebrush habitat now, not later. That's why he's working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the energy industry to come up with a plan of action.
We did crisis management with peregrine falcons. We did it with bald eagles. We've done it with wolves. But if we can avoid the crisis management and instead manage to avoid crisis, I think it's pretty exciting, and that's the way to go in the 21st century.
Good. Hey, bird on.
It's time to return the eaglets to their nests. Preston lowers the second one down to climber Charavella, who's been installing a remote camera to learn what prey they're eating in this energy field.
Nick, all smooth?
Really good.
Are there any prey remains?
We got a bag full of what looks like rabbits.
Preston says while this initial phase of the study is wrapping up, he plans to make sure the data collection continues well into the future.
So Nick's taking off the hood now, and we'll place them right back in the nest where they'll feel comfortable and stay for a while.
The question is, will golden eagles stay put in these increasingly disturbed landscapes?
As climate change heats up the American West, it's drying out the habitat of many birds, forcing them to move north where it's cooler. One such bird is the short-eared owl. It may not be a bird you've heard of, but as Melody Edwards found out, it's one scientists and bird lovers still give a hoot about.
Early one evening, I meet University of Wyoming Biodiversity Institute's Zoe Nelson, somewhere between Gillette and Buffalo. Shadows grow long on red bluffs and green sagebrush. We're out here as part of a program to get regular folks like me and my husband, Ken, he's tonight's driver, to help keep track of short-eared owls. The program is called WAFLES. That stands for, okay, this is a mouthful, Western Osseo Flammeus Landscape Study.
Flammeus is Latin for flaming. In the right light, they kind of have this like orangey hue.
That's Nelson, and WAFLES is just one of several citizen science programs she manages. This one is collecting data on short-eared owls to see how climate change is impacting them. Tonight's plan is for us to travel a dirt road where these owls are known to thrive, stopping every half mile to look around for them for a timed 5 minutes.
And actually, here we are, so go ahead and take, you can pull over. You can do a U-turn.
She coordinates volunteers all across the state. There's 50 of these grids total, all placed in their native grassland habitat where owls can hunt voles and mice.
This project spans actually all across 8 western states, but it's our first year in Wyoming, and before we even recruited volunteers, we had all of the survey locations signed up for.
Each volunteer conducts 2 surveys, one at the beginning of the peak breeding season and one, like tonight's, at the end. It's a great way to collect data, but Nelson admits it's not perfect.
People sign up, obviously, for an owl survey, hoping to see owls. And if they do, that's wonderful, it's great. But if they don't see them, it's just as important to us.
And not seeing these owls is becoming the norm. They are one of the most widely distributed owls in the world. But Nelson says in recent decades, their numbers have nosedived, down by 3/4 over the last 40 years. The National Audubon Society lists it as climate endangered, and it's on Wyoming's list of species of greatest conservation need. So we're not really counting on seeing one.
All right, well, can we step outside and
see
what we see?
We stand by the road looking through binoculars in every direction. Nelson takes notes.
Cloud cover, pretty clear.
But no owls, so we get in the car.
Just half a mile up?
Yeah, if you have the...
At this next stop, right next to the highway, Ken spots a bird.
Something flying over there.
Is there something flying over there?
Oh, that is a short-eared owl!
No way!
Yeah!
Really?
Wow. Wait, you guys, you gotta look.
I gotta see.
Oh, we saw one!
Oh my gosh, he is flappy.
All the bird books say the best way to know you're looking at a short-eared owl is its quirky flight pattern. They call it moth-like. But that's not the only way it defies typical owl behavior. It also doesn't hoot.
It seems like more like an angry cat. Not a meow, but like a cat.
Here's one I found on a bird website. We continue on our survey. As the sun goes down, we make our way to the north side of the grid near several ponds. Jeff LeBaron is with the National Audubon Society that's working on a climate watch of the world's birds. He says short-eared owls rely on wetlands like these for nesting. He says housing and energy development are replacing ponds like these.
And draining marshes and pollution and, you know, alteration of the habitat that they need to nest down here.
LeBaron says birds with really specific needs, like short-eared owls and their reliance on marshy nesting sites, are the ones most likely to feel the effects of climate change. He says warming temperatures are likely to dry up such ponds, forcing owls to move in search of better sites.
Much of their current wintering range, the climate suitability in that over the next 80 years, likely to move northward.
And that means in order to adjust to warming temperatures, they're going to have to move year-round into their usual wintering areas. We finished our last survey and turned the car around. We're just heading back when...
Was there another one? It is. That actually might be.
Wow.
That is yep. That is totally another one.
Oh my gosh.
There's two.
Oh, flying together.
Cool.
Wow.
So I actually think that we're seeing a courtship display.
Kind of going up and down?
You see one of them, like... Yeah. Corkscrew spiral up and then dip down, and the other one's kind of following it around.
Okay.
Do you see that?
Yes.
Can you see him?
The male owl spirals up and then claps his wings underneath him and drops from the sky for a long, dizzying moment. We watch the display as long as the light allows, knowing there's a possibility we'll never see another one like it again. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
And that rounds out this episode of The Modern West. We'll have a new episode next month. In the meantime, you can find more stories and episodes at our website, themodernwest.org. And if you have a moment to help others find the show, you can leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Sam Poitras produced the show. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell. And I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.